Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to this event hosted by the European Institute and the Cañada Blanc Centre for Contemporary Spanish Studies, which is the final lecture this term in the European series supported by the LSE's annual fund. Tonight, it's my enormous pleasure to introduce the Spanish Minister of Justice, His Excellency Dr. Juan Fernando López Aguilar. Dr. López Aguilar was born in Las Palmas in the Canary Islands in 1961. He studied law at the University of Granada, where he was awarded the special prize for his year. He also has a degree in political science and sociology from the Universidad Complutense of Madrid, and has a master's in law and diplomacy from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. He holds a doctorate in law from the University of Bologna, also with distinctions. For some time, he was professor of constitutional law at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria, and later the Jean Monnet Professor of Law and European Integration. He's published several important books in the field of constitutional law. In politics, as against his academic career, in politics, as a member of the Partido Socialista Obrero Español, he has been parliamentary advisor to successive ministers of justice, Enrique Mujica and Tomás Cuadra Salcedo, between 1990 and 1993, and later has been the director general of the cabinet in the ministries held by Jerónimo Saavedra, first of all of public administrations, and later of education and science, between 1993 and 1998. He's a deputy in the Spanish Cortes and has been Minister of Justice since 18th of April 2004. His presence here tonight, I think, is of enormous political importance. It's of enormous importance to all of us in Europe who are concerned with the question of terrorism and its spread. It's an even more important moment, I think, in terms of Spanish politics, because of the continuing political debate, if one could put it that way, regarding what happened with the famous Once M, the terrorist attack on the 11th of March 2004. It's a marvellous moment for all of us at the LSE tonight that he can be with us, and I'm very, very happy to welcome him here to talk to us tonight. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I'm glad of being here, real glad of being given the opportunity to take the floor in this institution of enormous prestige, since it was founded by Sidney Webb and Beatrice Webb back in 1895, as we were recalling just a few minutes ago. I'm really happy of taking the floor in an institution which is devoted to academic excellence. I am a scholar myself. I have developed an academic career, and I am taking here the floor before you as Minister of Justice of the Government of Spain, which is a government committed to progressive politics and change, political change. So I think it is a real privilege to have an occasion to highlight the importance of a permanent element of the Spanish national politics, both in the domestic field and in the foreign action, as it is its commitment, permanent commitment, against all forms of organized crime, and most particularly against terrorism. Besides, there will be also some other occasion to share with you some few views about a new phenomenon that has emerged very abruptly but very intensely in Spain in recent times, as it is illegal immigration. There is, of course, a common thread among the two phenomena, terrorism and illegal immigration. But it is not that they are both naturally linked by its criminal nature. As a matter of fact, this is the way we see it. Terrorism is a criminal activity that has to be dealt with on a rational basis. This is what I would like to share with you just for a few minutes, maybe some 30 minutes. I could be trying to develop my points in order to open up some floor to share with you an open discussion, which is, I think, the most relevant significance of an academic gathering, as it is the case here and now. I would like to share with you an academic session, so I will try to bring up some issues in order to let them open for discussion later on. I would like to then provoke and incentive some questions that might be raised and try to do my best in order to respond on behalf of the Spanish government. Let me just tell you, for a start, that we all know, we are all aware that we're living in a new international order which is characterized by future of the so-called globalization. Of course, we've got to be ready to live in a world where new regionalism is taking place, and at the same time, the European Union is trying to get relevance as a significant actor of the new international order. We know that globalization is full of potential for change, and there are, of course, two main attitudes towards this fact of globalization. I would say there's, of course, a conservative attitude which tries to picture the globalization process as a threat in itself that has to be dealt with on a military basis, trying to stress unipolar stances before the whole thing. But there is also a progressive approach in which we might underline the importance of empowering the people to deal with change and to learn how to live a whole life long with change and not be afraid of it, not be scared of it. This is the progressive attitude, and this is, of course, the inspiration of the Spanish government under the leadership of Prime Minister Zapatero, particularly when it comes to dealing with the B side of the globalization, because, of course, there is an A side of globalization, which is full of potential for growth, for welfare, for employment, technological and scientific advance. But there is also a B side in the globalization, which is, of course, the globalization of the organized crime, human trafficking, money laundering, illicit economic activities, and, of course, the global scale of terror and threats against security. There is a pathology of globalization involved. We also have to live with it. As regards to the importance of justice, I would say the main lines of the time we're living in are, first, the universal awareness of what is fair. We have come to a point in which there is a global consciousness of what is fair and what is unfair. Of course, the minimum soil for fairness has to do with human rights and a global consciousness of the importance of human rights as a minimum standard for recognizing each other. There is also the importance of a new category of states, which are significant as actors in a global scale. This is the category of the so-called failed states, and even worse, the rogue states, which are in no mood and capable of fulfilling their responsibilities before the international communities. And there is also an unprecedented momentum for the public opinion at a global scale as well, most particularly the emergence of the victims as stakeholders of specific rights before the public authorities, both at the domestic field and at the international scale, in which the motto would be justice is not implored anymore, it's no longer implored, it is just required at an international scale. In this respect, I think, of course, there are some very relevant events that have been taking place in a very short period of time. Major steps have been made by the international community in order to take consciousness of these three phenomena that had been put together by history. That would be the case, of course, of the internalization of the necessity of the new global order, of which its expression, the statute of the so-called International Criminal Court that was signed up in Rome, being established in The Hague. I know that we are all aware of the importance of this institution this very day, in which is, of course, at the main headlines worldwide because of the trial that has been conducted in order to prosecute the genocides of the former Yugoslavia. It is also the case of the European Union itself as a global actor. The European Union has made major progress in a very short period of time, just 10 years. The first time in which the European Union got consciousness that it was not only about the market, about integrating forces, capital, goods, and services within an integrated market, but also about reaching out for some political identity with constitutional ambition, was with the occasion of the so-called Maastricht Treaty back in 1992. But the emergence of the so-called space of liberty, security, and justice took place with the ratification of the so-called Amsterdam Treaty in 1997. It is a major chapter expressing the constitutional ambition of the so-called constitutional treaty, which is on its way for ratification at the moment. I know there are some skepticism about it, but Spain voted massively yes with the occasion of the national referendum that took place among us February 20th of 2005. So, according to our view, there is still credit, and it's still worthy that we do our best in order to make crystal clear that Europe is not only a market, but also a space for liberty, justice, and security matters. The European Union, in this respect, has made major progress in order to bring up new elements for coordinating our energies and our capacities in order to be more effective against all threats against our security, both at a national level and at a European level. The understanding is simple, and it is that we have learned that there are so many threats which are beyond the capacities of each one of the member states of the international community, and of course beyond the capacities of each one of the member states of the European Union, that we need to coordinate with each other. We need to share our efforts in a coordinated strategy in order to serve our purpose, not only of being more effective, but being at the same time useful to our citizens around, which have a right to expect the best from all of us. That is particularly the case, of course, when it comes to deal with terrorism. European Union has made major progress in this specific point. The European Judicial Network, the European Judicial Cooperation, expressed by the so-called Eurojust institution, the European Arrest Warrant that has overcome the loopholes of the obsolete extraditional instrument of bilateral cooperation when it comes to be ready to service every suspect of criminal offenses to the countries which are sharing with us our same determination in order to fight against all the forms of organized crime that we have ahead us and facing us are only some of the elements that I would like to bring up to your knowledge, as it is also the case of the European Criminal List and the harmonization of the European criminal codes of the member states in each one of the criminal legislation. But I think that this political will of being more effective against the B-side and the manifestations, the expressions of the B-side of the pathology of the globalization are worth noticing when it comes to two particular points in which I would say the Spanish experience happens to be especially relevant and worth sharing with all of you. The first one would be terrorism. The second one would be fighting against human trafficking, with its particular dimension of fighting against illegal immigration. So let me talk about terrorism first. I am speaking on behalf of a nation, of a country, that has fought against terrorism for many years. We have learned through pain, through bloodshed, shedding tears and blood, to fight and to deal with terrorist attacks. There has been, I'm sure you know, a persistent terrorist activity on the side of the so-called ETA, terrorist organization, a form of terrorism that alleges nationalism, radical nationalism, seeking for independence, but which signifies itself for its willingness and readiness to cause murder, assassination, and mass destruction under the disguise of this seek for political independence for the Basque country. That's what makes it a terrorist organization. Not its sense, but its criminal activity. And we know very well that in order to deal with this kind of terrorism, a whole array of instruments are needed. Just for a start, the Spanish written constitution, which was drafted in 1978, happens to be a unique example of written constitution which encompasses all the different elements which are needed in order to deal with a terrorist threat and with a terrorist form of crime. Several clauses in the Spanish written constitution deal specifically with the necessity of fighting terror in all respects. They provide specific clauses concerning the Spanish criminal code. They provide specific clauses concerning the Spanish criminal procedural code, which is a different thing. And at the same time, the Spanish constitutional clauses make sure that in every case, fundamental rights are to be respected. That human rights are non-negotiable. So there has to be a combination of determination while protecting human rights and procedural guarantees regarding due process of law, and at the same time be effective against all forms of terrorism. That is why this whole array of elements have been unfolded through the development itself of the Constitution throughout the years that have passed ever since the Constitution was adopted. That is the case of the Spanish Criminal Code, which encompasses at least 25 specific articles dealing with all forms of integration or cooperation with terrorist organizations, which means cooperating with terror, being accomplice to terrorist attacks, covering up terrorist attacks, funding terrorist attacks, financing terrorist organizations, and advocating for terror, which means what you might call glorification of terror. All of these figures are specifically observed in the wording of the Spanish Criminal Code. There are also specific clauses in the Spanish Criminal Procedural Code to deal with secrecy of communication, right to privacy, and of course the maximum term of detention and provisionary imprisonment in order to make sure that we do our best and we deal with effectively all forms of terror. Finally, we have also built up a whole array of institutional arrangements in order to specialize our capacities insofar as security forces, public prosecutor's office, and judiciary are concerned. So we've got a whole array of security units, both in the National Civil Guard and in the police forces. We've got also intelligence units, which are specially trained in order to deal with terrorism. We have special units within the public prosecutor's office, and most importantly, we have built up a special judicial organ under the name of Audiencia Nacional, in English, Spanish National Court. You could put it that way, Spanish National Court, which is to be understood under the principles of centralization, which means all the capacities in order to fight against all forms of organized crime are to be concentrated in a single body, in a single judicial organ, which is this, the National Court. The second would be specialization, which means that all the people serving both in the public prosecutor and the judiciary in this particular body are to be specifically trained in order to deal with forms of terrorist attacks and organized crime. And third, security or safety, if you will, which means that you have to armor very specially this institution to make sure that it's not hindered by the risk of physical attacks or physical injuries on the side of all forms of terrorist gangs or criminal organizations whatsoever. These three assets are being used for the last 25 years dealing with organized crime in Spain, and have performed in an outstanding way. I would like to pay a tribute with this particular occasion to the performance of the men and women who have served in this institution and who have dealt for so long with complicated matters which are delicate in its nature, and of course who have an enormous potential of risking imbalance and prejudice and damage to the quality of the determination of the Spanish people to live peacefully in freedom and under the rules of the constitutional order, under the rules of law, under the rules of the game. So this particular experience of the Spanish National Court has turned out to be a massive expertise, a massive source of experience and knowledge of how to deal with these kind of issues. And largely so, it explains that when we happen to learn so dramatically, so tragically, that the ETA terrorism was not alone in the galaxy of terror, we didn't need to resort to new ideas, to new solutions, to new institutions, because the whole thing had been framed up already under the constitutional clauses, under the criminal code, under the criminal procedural code, and under the specialization both of the public prosecutor's office and the judiciary, which are performed very well. I'm sure you know, we had this jihadist attack, terrorist attack, which caused the massacre of March the 11th. We pay tribute to the victims and to the memory of this unprecedented attack that we suffered in Spain, in Madrid, just a few hours ago. And let me share with you the conviction that the thorough investigation that has been conducted by the independent investigating judge who has been in charge of clarifying all the circumstances and, of course, bringing to justice all the suspects and all those who are going to be tried any time soon is going to be a full satisfaction for the determination of the whole of the Spanish people and the Spanish democratic society that a message is going to be sent loud and clear. No one is going to get away with it. No one is going to be unpunished with the occasion of this terrible massacre that took place in Spain. That we're going to be sending a message all over the world of the experience that we've had, and we are ready to share it with all the actors of the global system in order to keep pushing forward, in order to be cooperatively be effective against all forms of terror. But this is not the end of the story. We have to learn from experience, and this is why, according to the experience we had March the 11th, of course, according to the experience that the U.S. had in the occasion of 9/11, the experience you had here in the U.K. with the attacks that took place July the 7th, we have to keep building up to the best of our capacities this so-called space of liberty, security, and justice in Europe and within the international community. And we have to frame up an action plan that has been devised and designed by the European authorities according to some common positions and resolutions that have been adopted by the European institutions, with some major featuring lines I would like to share with you. First of all, would be the need of improving our ability to have access to information, full information, according to the so-called principle of availability, which means that we need to share all the information we have, and we need to be sure that we have interconnection system for sharing all the information we have about the ways and means that the terrorist gangs and organizations resort to perpetrate their crimes. Also, we need to identify the financing resources. We need to freeze the assets and be effective, bringing that financiation to a halt. We need to prevent terrorist attacks. We need to learn to know how we can isolate those factors who allegedly are influential in the radicalization of certain groups within our own societies, which makes us vulnerable and potential targets to terrorist attacks. We need to learn how to deal with the consequences of a terrorist attack, how to avoid panic, how to restore normality when such a terrorist attack should take place. We need to link the public strategy, the public diplomacy, with the private sector as well, involving particularly the industrial sector in being effective against terror. We need to learn to assist the victims of terror. This is something in which in Spain we have devoted a lot of attention and energy over the last few years. We have developed large-scale programs for attending the victims of terrorist crimes. We have devoted resources in order to finance all kind of aids that victims of terrorist attacks should need and should have a right to expect from public authorities, which means psychological assistance, of course medical care, social assistance, and all the benefits when it comes to housing, education, memory, being taken in consideration as stakeholders for the implementation of policies in dealing with counterterrorism. In all respects, victims have a right, have a say. In all respects, victims have to be taken into consideration. It's also important relaunching EU's foreign relations in this specific field, in every sphere of international action, which means sub-international organizations with international community, developing aid, and of course the bilateral relationship of the EU with the United States as a major global actor. But as I say, there is another field in which it is interesting to notice that having accumulated so much of an experience in dealing with terrorism, and learning how to fight terrorism, somehow we Spaniards have been taken by surprise by another form of criminal activity at a global scale. That's human trafficking. One of which expressions is illegal immigration. We have been dealing with terror for 30 years now, but the strategy against illegal immigration is just recent in Spain, because we hadn't experienced this kind of a priority for long. On the contrary, Spain had a long tradition of sending people abroad, had a long tradition of emigrating people, resorting to new expectations for a better life abroad, particularly to Latin America. All of a sudden, Spain has turned out to be a member state of a bloc of progress, welfare, and well-being within the European Union. All of a sudden, in just a maximum 10 years period of time, Spain has turned out to be a recipient for massive illegal immigration. We kept being a 39 million people society for 20 years with the lowest birth rate in the world. All of a sudden, we turned out to be from 39 million people to 44 million people in just 10 years' time. In the range of just 10 years, we have received at least 5 million people who are knocking on our doors and, of course, pressing up on our capacity to integrate, on our capacity to respond, pressing up on our social services, pressing up on our educational system, pressing up on our healthcare service, but pressing up also on our national identity. Spain used to be a very homogeneous society for centuries. In every respect, race, religion, identity were very much linked by a hegemony in culture throughout centuries in Spain. All of a sudden, we're dealing with an increasing pluralism which is here to stay. There is no turning back. There is no turning point. We are about to become more and more so a pluralistic society in every single respect, including, of course, religious, racial, and self-identification clauses, self-appreciation clauses. But the fact of the matter is that we have come to the disclosure of immigration as an extremely complex fact, multifactorial in its origin, global in its scale, extremely difficult to manage, and of course impossible to manage, of each one of the countries which are integrating the European Union on its own. We've come to the point in which this is also an issue in which Europe has to learn to perform as a significant actor at a global scale. The vulnerability of our external borders is not something that affects only those countries which are at the southern border of the European Union, but affects us all. Only because of the fact that there is free circulation and free movement within the Schengen area in the whole of Europe. So we need to learn how to deal with this completely new phenomenon, and most particularly, how to deal with the criminal side of this phenomenon, which is, of course, the proliferation, the explosion, the phenomenal blossoming of international mafia, which are trafficking with human beings all over the world and very importantly so, within the core of the African continent. Exploiting the hopes and the needs of millions in despair, which are ready to give away anything, which are ready to give out their lives, fleeing from despair, fleeing from hunger, famine, from pandemics, epidemics, diseases, from the absolute lack of horizons in their lives. We are receiving tons of it for some time now. I am a member of parliament representing the Canary Islands in the Spanish parliament, and the situation in the Canary Islands is most expressive of this anguish of us. The Canary Islands have been receiving tons of illegal immigrants for almost 10 years now, and they are changing very dramatically and fastly the landscape in every sphere which is relevant. Of course, we have to deal with this phenomenon and do it effectively, and at the same time pay respect to the fundamental rights involved. First thing, these people are human beings. There's no way we can forget about that. These people knocking on our doors, risking their lives to set food on shore, the Canary Islands, in these little boats by the name of pateras or cayucos, stemming from the northern West African coast, be it Western Sahara, be it Morocco, be it Mauritania. These people, all of these people, men and women and children alike, are human beings. So they have to be treated as such, right from the start. We have to prevent every temptation for demagogy, xenophobia, and negative reaction against this fast-track path of change we've been undergoing for some 10 years now. But of course, a response is needed, and it has to be built up. And it's beyond the capacities of the member states, of the single member states of the European Union. That is the case, of course, of Spain. That is why, with a very dramatic occasion, which was the episode that took place, I'm sure you know, by all of the people trying to jump up the fence of Ceuta and Melilla, a council of ministers in the European Union was devoted specifically to deal with these issues. And of course, Prime Minister Zapatero and the whole of the Spanish government are committed to make a difference in this respect and try to bring leadership to this European scale of strategy against illegal immigration, which at least consists of these following elements. First of all, you gotta fight the human trafficking mafia right on the original core of Africa. That is a fact. And of course, we have to share our capacities to do that, because it is beyond the capacities of each one of us. Many of the African countries have no diplomatic, consolidated, or established relationships with many of the European member states. In many of these African countries, Spain has no diplomatic representation at all. So we need to share energies. We need to share our capacities in order to try to establish a principle in there and to coordinate our efforts in order to learn how this international mafia are trafficking with people. How do they run? How do they serve their purpose? How can we dismantle all this international human trafficking mafia right from the original core of Africa? The second point is, of course, stressing up readmission agreements, because it's, of course, not written that we have to open up unlimitedly the capacity of integration of the European countries, of the European member states. But to do so, we had to cooperate with the African countries to our best. We have to understand their needs. We have to learn how to serve their development strategies. We have to help them to enhance their own capacity to cooperate with us. We have to link development strategies with readmission agreements and with the strengthening of our diplomatic relationships. Third, of course, we have to take into consideration our own market economies. And we have to set up a strategy in which the assimilation, the incorporation of a new labor force is a fact and a factor for our growth and the sustainability of our growth. In Spain, we have fulfilled under the Zapatero government a number of commitments we explicitly made before the Spanish citizenship in our electoral manifesto first, and then when Zapatero was trusted with the leadership of the cabinet and the government as invested as prime minister. One of them, as I'm sure you know, was the pullout from Iraqi soil. The Spanish people was massively against that military action, and it was an explicit commitment that should Zapatero be entrusted with the office of prime minister, be elected by a majority of the Spanish people with that capacity, he would pull out from Iraq. So he did it. A second one was to recognize that millions of people were already on the Spanish soil working as labor force, servicing our needs, but ignored by our legislation as if they were not there, but they were. So an explicit commitment was made that the Zapatero government would regularize, would normalize, and would make transparent the presence of that large number of men and women who were already in Spain working on a day-to-day basis, but with no rights at all, because it was like if it were transparent or non-existing, ignored by the laws of the state. So we made it. But more is needed. We have to take into consideration which is the strategy for the sustainability of the growth of our market economy in order to incorporate the people knocking on our door on a rational basis. Fourthly, of course, there has to be a massive investment on the side of the European Union in developing the core of Africa. I think it is most important that we learn that we cannot live no longer in such an inequitable kind of a world, such an unfair kind of a world, in such a degree of injustice as it is the case at the final end of the explanation of this unprecedented momentum of illegal immigration and people willing to risk their lives in order to have an opportunity to set foot on our soil, be it in Spain, be it in the UK, be it in any point of the European Union as a whole. Just let me share with you as a final remark that this is what it's all about. Globalization is there to stay. There's no turning back, but we have to learn how to make it manageable with equitable rules in order to empower the people to cope with change and live a whole life long dealing with change. We also have to establish a worldwide forecast system in order to manage change and to prevent it, but of course with a rational understanding of the phenomena we're dealing with. So let me put it clear just in some final remarks. Terrorism is no warfare. It's not a kind of a war. It's a criminal activity. We have to fight rationally, learning how it operates learning how it unfolds its capacities, learning how it blows and attacks, how it makes us vulnerable. There are no magic formulas, of course, but coordinated action and information at a massive scale are essential. No country can do it on its own. Not the UK, nor Spain, nor France, not Italy, none of the single member states of the international community can do it on its own. So it's a must that we integrate our strategies and share information and instruments of action in a coordinated response. Human rights are to be respected by all means, in every case, and we have to combat all forms of organized crime with the full weight of law. And finally, experience and will to cooperate are assets that Spain is well ready to share with all the partners and the allies of the international community, both at the European level and at the new global international order. Spain has a lot to share. Spain has a lot of expertise, experience, and knowledge, which is willing to share with all of its partners in the international communities. That has been the case here today in my fruitful conversation with my colleague, the Lord Chancellor here in the UK. That is also the case when I ever fly over to the States or whenever I have the opportunity to reaffirm that Spain is determined to perform its very best in order to create, to frame up the right response, the proper response as it regards to these new challenges which are lying ahead us and awaiting us all in the near future. So I thank you, and I only hope that I have given some floor for you all now to raise your questions that I'll be more than happy to answer at the best of my own capacity. Thank you so much.
Well, we now have approximately 10, maybe 15 minutes for questions. I don't know if the stewards have a microphone. Yeah. So I open it to the floor. Young man in the second row.
Minister, what would be the policy of the Spanish government if you think that you have a terrorist, a Spanish citizen who is a terrorist, but against whom you do not have enough evidence to prosecute him?
Well, of course, the procedural rights are to be respected in every case. And of course, due process of law is established by the Constitution. So if you do not have enough evidence to prosecute, you simply do not prosecute, however you put it. You simply do not prosecute. You need substantial evidence. You need evidence enough. And that's the way it goes. As a matter of fact, of course, we have experienced ourselves in so many occasions the frustration of having an impression, of having a, let's say, a persuasion, a conviction that something really went on and someone is liable for that, is to be held responsible for that. And despite of it, having to stick by the rules of the game, by the rule of law, which is a guarantee that we are all determined to observe the constitutional principles and standards, and that is a limit that cannot be trespassed, whatever it might take, whatever it happens.
I have two questions and maybe also a comment. First of all, you mentioned or you sort of talked about the Spanish experience as an asset, but you haven't really talked about the dark side of the Spanish experience on fighting terrorism. I mean, there were also chapters in fighting ETA when, I mean, there were scandals about death squads previously. I mean, obviously it's not a current debate, but hasn't that also influenced the current sort of thinking in Spain? But my other question is about this sort of connection between illegal immigration and terrorism, because for me, in your presentation, there wasn't really the logical connection between the two, and maybe there isn't. I mean, this is a thing we could debate, but it seemed to be the case that on the one hand, you have a very passionate view on the challenge of immigration, and on the other, you have terrorism, and the two get sort of kind of mixed up, whereby the one legitimizes the other, fighting against, you know, immigration, saying, well, we fight against terrorism, but the link is not really clear, and isn't there the danger of manipulating the sort of discourse on terrorism to boost a certain agenda which might be more restrictive than if it was really strongly separated from the issue of terrorism?
Well, let me make it short. First of all, you made a reference of episodes that have taken place throughout the protracted Spanish experience in fighting against terror. Let me tell you that the rule of law has prevailed all along Spanish history. Ever since we adopted the Constitution of 1978, and lessons have been learned for good. It is a fact that throughout late Francoism and in the early years of Spanish democracy, there was a continued line of what you have called a dirty war, or I might call a dirty war. I think you have used another expression against ETA terrorism. All of these episodes have been cleared up by the action of justice. The people that were involved were brought to justice. But it is a fact that even so, ETA terrorism has continued to strike and to perpetrate attacks and terrorist crimes up until now. And it is our must to do our best in order to put an end to it. I think that is the determination of the whole of the Spanish people, of the whole of the Spanish society, and that's the major lesson that you can draw from this experience of fighting against ETA terrorism. And it is now beyond any dispute that you must keep doing so under the rule of law, with the whole weight of the law, but only according to the legal instruments, to the legal instruments that are provided by the rule of law. Secondly, you were interested in the connection that I have tried to draw between these two forms of international criminal activity, which are behind two phenomena, which are utmost priorities for the Spanish policies, both at the domestic field and in the international arena. Of course, there are international criminal mafia, international criminal organizations behind the massive scale of illegal immigration. Of course there is. And of course there is also an understanding that to respond to it, it's beyond the capacities of each one of the member states in the international community. Even at the European level, that is a lesson which is beyond dispute. I think the most important thing is that Spain may have a claim to take the lead within the European Union and to have a say in setting up a strategy which involves all of the European actors in being effective while designing and devising up the proper response. We have a lot to learn from our own experience. We have a lot to share, I mean, from our own experience fighting against terror for 30 years. Now, it is much more recent and dramatic, the emergence of illegal immigration. But I think this example of Spain being caught by this massive influx of illegal immigrants all of a sudden, and at the same time showing determination for respect for human rights, treating people properly, and under the Zapatero government, paying respects to the fundamental rights of all those people involved, which is this so-called, in international terms, amnesty for illegal immigrants that has been granted by the Zapatero government is a good sign of determination of setting up this issue within the European agenda, and at the same time affirming very firmly that fundamental rights involved are to be respected in every case. That would be the linking, the connection that I would try to stress between the two phenomena. At the same time, you give me an opportunity to make a point, which is this. We must fight the rhetoric that tries to picture illegal immigration as a threat against national security. This kind of rhetoric, of course, has a presence in contemporary Spanish politics. Of course, there are spokesmen, spokespersons, who are trying to picture the whole thing of illegal immigration as a security matter, as a security challenge. This is not the way we see it. Immigration is a world of opportunity. Immigration is a human rights issue. Immigration is a world development issue. Immigration is a matter which deals with fairness and equitable rules at a global scale. But there is no legitimate claim to picture immigration as a threat to national security. It doesn't mean that we do not have a duty to perform in the service of national security. We do it. We fulfill it to the best of our capacities. And of course, national security has to be protected against all threats which might have arisen as a consequence of an illegal influx of terrorist organizations. But a difference must be told, and you have to draw the line between illegal immigration or immigration in every respect and national security, because they are completely different matters. The linking between each other is that they are two phenomena which needs more of Europe, are beyond the capacities of each one of the member states, and we have to learn how to live with those phenomena at a European scale, in the least investing resources and deploying to our best our readability to share information and coordinate response.
Hi. The main argument I have listened here in the UK about what Spain did with the withdrawal of the Spanish troops from Iraq is that it was a political mistake. I personally think it was not a political mistake, but my question is, what I would like to know is, what would be your counter argument for that? Why? What would you say it was not a political mistake, the withdrawal of the troops from Iraq? Thank you.
How could it be a political mistake to fulfill your word, to honor the word that has been given to your citizenships, to your fellow countrymen and women? How can it be a political mistake to honor your word? The withdrawal from Iraq was not by no means a consequence of the massacre that took place March 11th. It has been established as an explicit commitment in the electoral manifesto of the Spanish Socialist Party way ahead the elections took place. It was an explicit commitment of the Zapatero government. Should he ever be entrusted with the office of Prime Minister, he would honor his word. He said loud and clear all around the nation, read my lips, I'm going to do this. So it was a credibility test. He had no choice but to honor his word. The Spanish people were massively against the war, were massively against the Spanish intervention in Iraq, against the Spanish participation in the military strategy and military decisions that were framed up in order to unchain a military intervention on Iraqi soil. The Spanish people massively rallied out in the streets protesting and marching against the military intervention. The Spanish parliament was ignored. This public opinion was ignored. The people were devastated by that mistaken decision. That was the big mistake. The misleading decision was to get Spain involved in an action which was considered massively in Spain to be illegitimate under the international community standards and contrary to the Spanish Parliament and to the Spanish people's will. So Zapatero, as leader of the opposition, said loud and clear, I am ready to fulfill my responsibilities and my commitments within the international community. And we are. We have a presence in Afghanistan, which is consistent with the international legal order. We have a presence in Latin America in peacekeeping operations, in Haiti, for instance. We have a presence in Pakistan. We have a presence all over the world with our limited capacities, because we are not a big, major military actor at a global scale, but we are fulfilling our responsibilities before the international order. But we said loud and clear, we will not support this preposterous decision, which is going to bring about more turmoil, bloodshed, and suffering for so many innocent people, as it actually has happened. So the Spanish Prime Minister once was invested in the office, fulfilled his word before the people, and he did what it happened to be his only choice, honor the word that had been given. And of course, needless to say, that the Spanish people massively supports this decision now, just like then, just like 2 years ago. The Spanish people massively supports that decision because it was the right decision. It was the only decision that Zapatero could take.
I'm very sorry we can't take any more questions. I've got to bring the event to a close. Can I just say, before thanking the minister, that you're all cordially invited to a reception in the senior common room, which is on the fifth floor of the main building. And I just hope that you'll join me in thanking the minister for his extremely clear exposition of the situation, and particularly, I think, for his passionate commitment to human rights in the pursuit of the policies of the present Spanish government. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. Okay, we'll